This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia, with our ninth podcast, February the 12th. What we're going to cover today is going to be the medium and the larger size streams and the time period starting early June and going all the way through to early September. Now, when I say medium-sized streams, I'm talking about streams that are probably at least 100 feet wide that would give us the flexibility of wading downstream, in most cases without spooking them. Streams such as Penn's Creek up in Pennsylvania, the North Branch of the Saranac, the Beckler out in the park, the West Gallatin below Taylor's Fork would be considered a medium-sized stream. I'm even going to touch on the Madison and the Yellowstone as thoughts come to mind. So what I'm going to do is walk all the way through the season, and we're going to cover a pretty broad spectrum of information now. Now, my rods that I use on this, throughout the East Coast, I'm using a 904 for most of this, except when I get down into sulfurs and the tricos, I do go to a 2-weight there. In the West, I'm using probably a 906, but there again, now when I get into the small fly hatches out there, I do drop down into at least a 4-weight, even in the Rockies. The format I'm going to use, we're going to start off talking about the dries, a couple of the hatches, then we're going to talk about the terrestrials, get into some of the nymphs and some of the streamers. So we're going to kind of cover the whole spectrum here today. The sulfur hatch is still prevalent here in the mid-Atlantic area in early June. Incidentally, by the way, I'm gearing all this to how it takes place in my area of Virginia. So if you're north, south, east, west, you can adjust accordingly. But I'm talking about the sulfur hatch here in Virginia. Now, there are actually three different flies that fall into this category, but most of us are thinking about the Ephemerilla dorothea. Now, this is a good hatch here in Virginia in June in the Smith River down at Bassett, Virginia, Big Stony Creek in Edinburgh, Penn's Creek, Marinero, Utah, just to get real carried away about the sulfur hatch there. Now, the North Branch of the Saranac gets a good sulfur hatch. So a lot of the streams throughout the East Coast get the good sulfur dorothea hatch. Now, of course, in the West, you're talking about the pale morning dun. That'll come on a little bit later in the year out there, and the pale morning dun is one of my favorite hatches in the Rockies. Now, these are relatively small flies. We're talking about flies in sizes 16, 18. Fish by this time of the year are getting spooky. They're getting drag conscious, so we've got to really fine-tune what we're doing. Let's say we go into a tail of a pool and you see a couple good fish working on sulfurs. I often use a slackline cast. I especially like Marinero's slackline cast. His puddle cast is probably my favorite of all the slackline casts because you do want to get a drag-free drift on them. If I don't see fish coming up, and I'm talking about in June now. I'm talking about June and sometime all the way into July. I'll go ahead and cover that pool with a sulfur. Now, I like Ed Shank sulfur. I like the Murray sulfur. I like a sulfur that's got some orange in the body. Even on the Fail Morning Dun out on the Spring Creeks around Livingston, Montana, I go to sort of an orange-bodied sulfur version out there. The duns usually come off about 2 hours before dark, and the spinners come back about an hour later. Now, this varies tremendously from stream to stream. Some of the streams I fish, one particular stream I really like, the duns don't even come off good until about 20 minutes before dark. So you've got the whole world sort of compressed into a relatively short time period. So what you do is set yourself up so you're looking into that western horizon so you can spot those rise forms, because it can be fast and furious, and you can get some very large fish working on the sulfur hatch. There's no question about it. On some of the streams here in the east, especially some of the spring-fed streams, this is probably the largest fly. You say a 16 is a large fly? Yes, it is. This is some of the largest flies we get in good numbers throughout these streams. Now, a good friend of mine uses a floating nymph on some of these. I don't do it often, but every now and then, if you get a guy out there coming up, just won't take anything you're doing, you don't know what's going on, put on a sulfur nymph, grease the leader, grease the fly, and try him on a floating nymph, and every now and then you'll fake him out on that. From day to day, the sulfur hatch can trick you. I've taken many little mini weekend vacations at the time of the sulfur hatch, maybe hit a good sulfur hatch on a specific stream, we'll say Big Spring Creek up in Newville, for maybe 4 days in a row. go back the fifth day, everything looks the same, and you can't find a sulfur, and you can't find a rising fish, and you can't predict it. So you sort of got to play it according to what goes on. Now, I fish all my sulfurs on 6X. The Ed Shank fishes some on 5X, and Ed certainly is one of the finest anglers in the country. So if Ed goes 5X, I don't know why I feel I need to go to 6X, but I do. Now, I would definitely carry a good-sized landing net when you're fishing a good stream with a good sulfur hatch, because you can get into some big fish on this. Now, the trico hatch overlaps this. By early in June, we are getting the trico. The trico actually can be on all the way into October. Early in the season, they start about 7 o'clock in the morning. Now, in some of the streams I fish, the trico, this is that little black and white thing. In England, they call it the curse. We used to call it the canis, but then now they're telling us for the last 30 years we're supposed to say trico. So we're talking about the trico hatch. But this is a good hatch, but when this hatch starts in, May or even before, it'll be on at 7 o'clock in the morning. When I'm fishing a trico, I want to be on the stream and ready to go at 7 o'clock. And it's on from 7 to 9. Now, as the season progresses all the way through, and like I say, I've seen them on here in October, that hatch will get a little bit later in the day and a little bit later in the day. This is the one that Marinero sort of broke the bowl on when he published that story in Outdoor Life called The Hidden Hatch. Because before that, a lot of people just cussed little black flies. Well, it is a trico, and it's a dandy. Now, I fish my tricos at least on 7X, and in many cases, I go to 8X. Now, that's a matter of personal preference. So you can see why I want a two-weight on this thing. Slackline cast here is also very important, because I think I told you in one of the previous podcasts I hit a hit one brown when Vince and I were fishing together that actually, I timed him on my watch, he actually took 67 tricos in 60 seconds according to my watch. Yes, well, I finally got him, but Vince's encouragement. But these guys can be tough. Now, since you're fishing a fine leader, 7X or 8X, I use what I call a slip strike. I just let that line slide through my fingers and I set the hook and hopefully I'm not going to snap him off. And it's not hard to do. If you want to stop by the fly shop, I'll show you how to do that in a hurry. Landing net, again, is a big thing on these. Many mornings when I'm coming to work here at the fly shop in Edinburgh, the trico is on Big Stony Creek right at the time I'm coming to work, and that's awfully hard on my willpower. But don't overlook the trico hatch, because it's a dandy. Willie Downey and I fished it one or two days a week for 30 years. Now that Willie's 97 years old, we don't get there quite as often as we did, but it's trico's a trico. It'll teach you fishing. Now, let's talk about some of the attractors. Attractors are just what it says. They're attractor. We're talking about the Humpy, the Trude, H&L variant, even the Adams, although the Adams does match a number of caddis and some mayflies, the Adams technically is referred to as an attractor pattern. Mr. Rapidan could be considered an attractor pattern, a Royal Wolf, all those. Now, these are good hatches, good packed patterns here in the East. Beaver Kill up in New York is just outstanding along the fishing along the banks. Now, you're not going to go out in the real heavy, but if you want to go over and fish the banks, especially across the stream there at Horsebrook Run and fish up that far side, you can get some outstanding fishing going up that far side, say fishing a Trude or an H&L variant. Now, I would probably use a size 16. I'd go to 16, and I'd probably fish 6X on those attractors. North Branch of the Saranac, you can get some great action out in there. The bigger streams out in the West are good. Yellowstone, Madison, we do a lot of fishing, just general attractors. Many years ago, two friends of mine were headed to Montana on their first trip, and I was telling them about this one particular area that I always got a big brown trout on in the Madison down there below Reynolds Pass. And they listened to my story appropriately, and I said, well, now you're going to have to wade across the stream here. When you get on the far side, go up to, if you see the first lodgepole pine, and right beside that lodgepole pine, there's a little spring that comes in. I said, there's always a big brown feeding right where that little spring comes in. Well, I don't think either one of them believed me. They went up, and I'll be darned if they didn't catch the fish. And they called me that evening and said, I can't believe you sent us 2,000 miles, had us wade across the Madison, put us right within 2 feet of where the fish was. But that can go with an attractor. I think they took that on an Adams, but I don't remember exactly. But talking about the Adams, now, I do extremely well down in the Snake with the Adams. my son Jeff and I were floating the snake one time with Bill Klein, and we were picking up a fair number of fish going along, and Bill saw a big log jam down below us, and he says, I'm going to swing around that thing and come in below it and shoot an Adams up in that slack water and see what happens. And Jeff caught the biggest cutthroat we either one of us have ever seen. I don't remember exactly how big it was, but we got pictures. It was a very, very big cutthroat. So the Adams, Coachman True, that kind of thing. Oh, listen, while I'm talking about it, let me tell you a little bit about the Yellowstone. The Yellowstone, Richard Parks is really hot to trot on Pounding the Corners. Richard guides at a Gardner. Pounding the Corners, right where the main part of the riffle dumps into the pool. Go into those little corner areas and fish. Richard likes a Coachman Trude, and he knows more about it than I do. But fish a Coachman Trude size 14 or 16 in those corners right beside the fast runs in the Yellowstone, and you can get some outstanding fishing. And the same thing applies over on the Madison, down there below Reynolds Pass on down Frank Shaw's Ranch, especially if you get over on that fireside in the evening, and you can fish up that fireside with Adams or Trudes, House and Lot variant, or Mr. Rapidan, and you can mop up even when there's no hatch in the evening. Once the light gets off those water, those browns will move into that shallow water over on the west side below Frank Shaw's, and you can get some fantastic fishing. So don't overlook the attractors just because you're really not matching a hatch. Now, I've got to talk about terrestrial because in the summer, terrestrials to me, now remember, I'm going all the way through from June till September. So terrestrials to me are very important. I just tend to catch more fish on terrestrials than I do the others. I almost always start with the Murray's Flying Beetle. In a larger stream, I'd probably use a 14. Smaller stream, I'd go down to 16. If they give me a hard time, I'll go down to an 18. Couple different ways I do that. Now I'm talking about up in the Beaver Kill, up at Horse Brook Run, North Branch of the Saranac, up and even out in the Rockies. I'm talking about fishing terrestrials now. Cover the water. If you don't see fish rising, go ahead and cover the water, thinking about if you're fishing browns, you want to hit the shady side, the undercut banks, back under the trees, that kind of stuff. If you see rising fish, certainly go one-on-one with those rising fish, and unless there's a specific hatch, they are not going to be super-duper selective, and a good chance you're going to fool them on that beetle. Now, I mentioned this earlier, but if you missed it, it's worth knowing. I call the Murray's flying beetle what I call a hatch finisher. Now, let me just give you an example. Suppose I'm fishing the Trico hatch. Pretty close to the end of the day, the duns have been up there for about 2 hours, and the spinners are falling, and the hatch is about over, but you still got a few fish out that want to come up. Now, they're not taking every fly that comes down the tube, but they're out there on feeding stations. You may even go to one. You may have had one particular brown that's been giving you a fit off and on all day. Go back to that guy. You know where he is. You just saw him come up again. Go back to that guy. Switch over. Take your trico off. Switch over to that flying beetle. Give him a mouthful. Give him a 14. Drop that up above him. And in many cases, that guy that's been thumbing his nose at your little delicate flies all day will jump on that beetle like he's been waiting for it all day. So I call it my hatch finisher. I use it on the trico. I use it on the sulfur. In many cases, I actually catch more fish on this than I did when on the tricos when they were doing their thing. Let me throw one out on that. When Willie and I were fishing the tricos a tremendous amount, we had good hatches throughout the East Coast, Pennsylvania, and to a certain extent a little bit in Virginia. But we were catching a lot of fish on tricos. We knew the hatches. We knew the fish. We knew the streams. Usually, an average day, you'd catch about a dozen pretty good browns. Some hot-to-trot day, you might get 2 dozen. Well, one deco on, even though the hatch is on, these guys are coming up lickety-split on it. I'm going to fish edge, cricket, and just see what happens. As I remember, I caught 6 fish that day. So it's not that when the hatch is on, you can't fool them with another fly. It's just when the hatch is on, the odds are in your favor showing them what they're used to seeing. But anyway, the beetle, don't ever overlook the beetle, because we always think about the Japanese beetles, but my biologist friends tell me that we have over 200 different beetle type insects around the stream, and the fish feed on them like crazy. A couple streams out, Benhart, Depew out and around Livingston are good streams. Smith River here at Bassett, Hank Norton used to coach football down there, and I used to tie beetles galore for Hank down there. As we mentioned, up in the Adirondacks, the Catskills, beetles are good in all of those, but and they're going to be better along the bank and that kind of thing. Now, I've got to jump over to ants because ants to me are very important. Typically, I will not fish an ant hour in and hour out. One of the games I do, let's say I've been using a beetle. I've drifted this beetle over a fish two or three times. He's come up, looked at it, said no. I may have even went to a smaller beetle. Maybe I went from a 14 down to an 18 beetle. He came up and looked at that and said no. That's when I'm going to taper on down to about 7X, going to slide in there with a Mr. Apodan ant in a size 20, and now small fly, small tippet, go to that same fish, and it's astounding how many times that same fish that's come up and refused your larger flies will nail that ant just like it's been waiting for it all day. If you could have seen this, you would have believed it, but I don't know if you're going to believe my story. I was doing this thing on the Madison one time down below Reynolds Pass. And that's heavy water. If you don't know what a friend of mine calls it, a 50-mile-long riffle. But anyway, I had raised this big brown. No, it was a big rainbow. I'd raised this big rainbow out there to a couple dries. He'd come up and looked at a couple hoppers. He'd come up and looked at a couple trudes. He even swung out and looked at a couple nymphs. Would not take anything I showed him, but he'd come out and look at them. I dropped down to a size 20 black ant, ran it right over him. Now, I could see him. Do you remember that chapter we did on the podcast we did on spotting the fish? I could spot this fish down there. I knew where he was. Ran that little ant over him. He came up and took it on the first drift. So don't hesitate to change off to a smaller pattern like an ant where you've got some tough fish, because it's a great pattern. Although, like I say, I seldom put it on and just go fish the water. But there's no reason not to do it. I'm just not in the habit of doing that. Now, I've got to talk about the hoppers and the crickets a little bit, because I am heavy into these. If you haven't heard me say it, I'm going to tell you that I think Ed Shank's cricket is probably the best fish finder going. What I call a fish finder is you drift it over him. Whether he's going to take it or not, he's going to come out and look at it. Basically, what that does for me is, even though maybe, say, I only take half of those fish, the other half have given away their feeding position. That's when I have used Ed's pattern as a fish finder. I know where that big brown is back under that undercut bank. I slip down to a little beetle or a little ant, run it right over him, and many times you've got that fish. But the cricket was the one that gave the insight as to where to fish. Hoppers. Before I leave the crickets, let me remind you now, the crickets wake up early in the morning. If you're fishing meta streams, if you're fishing the big rivers out west, even, say, Henry's Fork, the crickets wake up a little bit earlier than the beetles, than the hoppers. So early in the morning, go with your crickets and run those along the banks and that kind of thing. But now, hoppers are outstanding patterns. I use them a whole lot on the Firehole, the Madison, Madison up in the park, as well as the lower Madison. I use a whole lot of hoppers out in there. Now, up on the Madison up in the park and the Firehole up in the park, you're definitely going to want to run them along the undercut banks. Hole number three down there below the barns, one of the biggest fish I ever caught down in there was right in that hole number three. And those fish will really come up and take them. If you know where the barns are, between hole number one and hole number two, there's a tremendous stretch down there. You can pound hoppers right along that bank. But let me tell you about Henry's Fork. Everybody on Henry's Fork, now I'm talking about the railroad ranch, we're hot to trot on the hatches because it's got some wonderful hatches. However, there are times that you're going to be on Henry's Fork and the hatches aren't going to materialize. The wind blew the olives away or whatever is going to happen. There are just no flies on the water and there are no fish coming up. Walk those banks with about a size 14 hopper. I especially like Ed Shank's hopper. Usually call it a Latort hopper, but a Dave Whitlock's hopper is a good pattern. But walk those banks down there on the ranch all the way down to the Osborne Bridge on Henry's Fork with those hoppers, and you will be amazed how many big fish you'll pull out from under there. Even, as I say, when nothing exciting is going on. The Madison on down, even down toward Ennis, down there toward all the islands, down through there. You can put a hopper on and go in and fish behind those islands along the side of those cuts on that west side and just get fantastic fishing down through there with hoppers. So think about the hoppers throughout the entire season. I'm kind of neglecting the East Coast now. Don't overlook. For instance, Fisherman's Paradise up at Bellefonte. That upper end on that thing, you can take oodles of fish in that upper end on the Paradise with patterns like that. The little streams out west that I've neglected to mention, for instance, the Beckler. You know, if you want to hike in or take horses in that lower 4 to 7 miles of the Beckler down the corner of the park, there that is strictly meta water, and there are just oodles and oodles of turns after turns after turns down there. You can do well in the hoppers. So don't overlook the hoppers no matter where you are in that time period from June until September. Now I got to talk about nymphs. Nymph, at this time of the year, it's entirely up to you. I don't fish that many nymphs except under a couple certain situations I'm going to touch on. But on the East Coast, if you're fishing nymphs in that summertime period when the streams get down a little bit, you'd probably be better off dropping down to 14, 16, maybe 18 nymphs. Beadhead Prince, Mr. Rapidan, Beadhead, and Murray Caddis pupa, both in tan and olive, is excellent. And you can use that. You're going to probably be fishing them upstream dead drift, 6X. You like to use the bright butt leader. I'll put one SA indicator 3 feet above the fly and one 6 feet above it, and just cover the water primarily below the riffles and along the banks. And then when you get out west, you can play that same game. I mean, if you're in below where some of those big springs come in on, for instance, on the Yellowstone, and also over on the Madison, right above Ennis, there's some unbelievable springs. Don't overlook the shrimp, especially out there. Not that many crest bugs in some of that water, but there are shrimp out there running out your ear. Some people call them scuds, so whichever you want to call them. Randall Kaufman's pattern olive pattern in about a 16 is an excellent pattern and all that. Anytime you want to fish a shrimp, that's a good pattern. But you can take any of these smaller nymphs like I'm talking about, fish them upstream dead drift in the Rockies as well as out in here. Now, many years ago in the Yellowstone, I used to guide, one of my guides was a boy named Ray Hurley. Ray guided me for 17 years there till he passed away. I used to take a Bitch Creek nymph, maybe a size 6 or 8, fish it on maybe a 3X leader, go in below the riffles. Now, I mean right in the riffles themselves. Fish that thing upstream dead drift, and I'm talking about 15 to 25-foot cast, and I'd catch big rounds and rainbows stacked right up in those riffles right in the middle of the day. You'd say, well, sure, they're going to move in there in the evening. I had it happen all day long. Hurley would go back into town, tell some of the guys in there, they'd get all excited about it, and the first thing you know, everybody was out fishing Bitch Creek nymphs. But it is a very effective technique, as well as playing the smaller thing. But there's something to be said about a big fish, big fly. That was old Charlie Brooks's game. Oh, listen, while I'm talking about Brooks, let me throw out his technique. We touched on this, but if you don't know what it is, here it is. Now, we'll say hole number 2. That's where Brooks taught me to do it. Hole number 2 in the Madison. Brooks had rigged a 30-foot, what I'm going to call a high D head. He didn't like the ready-made lines, and we didn't have many in those old days, so Brooks made his own thing. You're standing right beside the water that you think is going to produce your fish. Now this is Brooks' system. I'm going to alter it a little bit with mine, but Brooks certainly knew a whole lot more about it than I ever will. You're standing right beside the area you think is going to hold the fish, and it may be, 15 feet out from where you're standing. Now, I'm talking about standing in some heavy water. Heavy water, the water out there is probably going to be shoulder deep or maybe even a good bit deeper. You're going to cast up and across stream at about a 45-degree angle, and your first cast is only going to be probably about 20 feet long. You're going to first let that thing sink down to the bottom. Then you're going to get your rod tip up in the air. Take that slack out with your left hand and swing that nymph right down beside where you're standing. Second cast, you're going to put out maybe another 3-4 feet line. Brooks would pound the plane to death. He wanted to make sure everybody down there had seen it. You're going to put out maybe just another 2 or 3 feet of line. Your cast, again, is going to be up and across stream, about a 45-degree angle. Don't dare pick that thing up. You're going to let that thing sink down to the bottom and get good slack in there. I said, well, Brooks, how am I going to catch that fish up there if I've got slack? He said, if I've done it right, I've already caught that fish. I'm waiting downstream. Can't argue with Brooks. So anyway, Let that thing sink down to the bottom. Once it's in the bottom, now I'm using the indicators in here, the scientific anchor indicator, to help me a little bit. Of course, on a high D head, you're not going to see any kind of indicators. But once it sinks down, you got to take that slack up because you're depending on feeling this strike. And then you'd gradually, using Brooks' method now, you're going to gradually lengthen that till you're fishing out maybe 30, 35 feet is about as far out as you've got control, because out beyond that, you're not going to get the depth you want, and you're not going to be able to detect those strikes in time to set the hook. But with Brooks's thing, he'd stay right there and maybe make 30 casts, go downstream about 5 feet, another 30 casts. I mean, anybody out there is going to see Brooks's fly. And I use that same thing out west. I admit it's crude, but he had Art Flick went out to visit him one day. Of course, Art Flick was very much into all the drives. By the way, Art was one of my heroes and one of my friends when I fished up there. But believe it or not, he actually convinced Art Flick by showing Art how to catch a fish that this really works. So if he can convince Art, he can convince anybody. But don't overlook the big nymphs in that big water out west, if that's your game. Now, I've got to talk about streamers. Streamers, of course, are what we call mini imitations. Let me talk about the east a little bit here first. In the east, by the middle of the summer, our streams are getting down. Even our larger streams, Penn's Creek, getting a little bit warm, getting a little bit lower. Even the Aussable up in New York's going to be getting a little lower. So what you're going to want to do is taper on down, I'd say at least to 5X. You're going to use a little bit smaller streamers. Now, remember, we're talking about mini imitation. Could be a size 10 or 12 Betsy streamer. I often will go as big as Ed Shanks White streamer in a size 8, though. One of our most productive of all of these streamer-type things is that Murray's Ollie Strength in about a size 10. That's a fish-catching machine. So these are what we're doing. They're just sort of general match, anything that's out there type fly. All right, your first option, if you think you've got enough water in the stream to wade downstream without spooking the fish, you can do your down and across, down, across, down, across. That is, you're going to wade down. You're on the side of the stream. Let's say you're on the Beaver Kill right there at Horse Brook Run. You've gone up under the riffle. You've walked up the bank, got up under the riffle, and you're going to fish back downstream, staying maybe within 2, 3, 4 feet of the bank, and you're going to cast down and across stream at about a 10-degree angle. Using a floating line now, give your fly time to sink, and then strip it very slowly across the bottom, and you're going to march down, 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 down. I've got friends that just spend hours on the river doing this the whole time. So you want to go slowly. You're going to want to make a little bit longer cast so you don't spook them. But this is certainly a viable game. Now, suppose you hit an area and say right there at Horse Brook Run. You think, gee whiz, I'm really shocked to see how low the Beaver Kill is. Well, which I hit one time. I was really surprised. I wasn't expecting to see it that low. Then you can turn and go upstream with your streamers. Yes, I know fishing streamers upstream is not a popular deal, but there's no reason you can't do it. The only thing you have to do is make sure you're tight to it so you can feel that strike. See, down across, no sweat, you're going to feel it, unless you're really asleep. But upstream, you've got to strip that line fast enough to make sure you're tight to it so you can feel that strike when you're fishing your streamer. Same flies, fishing them upstream. Now, it's not upstream dead drift nymphing. I'm not talking about that. Here, I'm casting upstream. I'm stripping it just a wee bit faster than the current's bringing it back, so I'm tight to it. I even do what I call a bounce retrieve. In that, I lift my rod tip maybe 3 feet every 10 feet of the drift. Now, what that's doing is swimming that streamer up off the bottom, almost like the old Lissinger lift, but I'm swimming that up just like a real minnow out there to attract those trout. And that is a very effective technique, but you're wading upstream, you're casting upstream, but you're still trying to feel that strike on the streamers. Good streams throughout these. Penn's Creek's good on this. The West Branch of the All Sable's good. Smith down at Bassett. Smith River down at Bassett. Hidden Valley of the Jackson right here in Virginia is excellent on this, especially up that upper end. But just fish them slowly and deeply. Now, let's go out west and look at some of the other options you've got. Out west, I'm in the old world. I use a high D head. When I'm serious streamer fishing, whether it's on the Madison, Yellowstone, wherever I am, if I'm fishing streamer seriously, I'd use the old high D head. Sinks probably about, 3 to 4 inches per second. Back it up with 100 feet of mono, and I shove that thing all the way across the river. Now, the flies I use out there, last couple years, we have been having fantastic success with that Murray's Olive Marauder. That's been the hot fly for the last couple years, and we've just had great success with it. The olive strength out there is outstanding. Now, sure, we use some of the stock patterns. I don't use much woolly boogers. I think there are better patterns around the woolly boogers, but that's neither here nor there. Spuddler is one of my very favorite out there. That's one the Red Monocle and Donnie Williams developed a long time ago to try to match a sculpin. Spuddler is definitely one of my favorite flies. Ed Shank's Black Sculpin is a good fly out there. But on these high D heads, or you could, if you don't want to fool with the mono like I do, you can go to a Teeny 200 on a 6-weight rod and you will be in good shape. Let me start at the head of the pool and fish that pool with you using streamers. Now, before you charge in there, you either wade it in there. By the way, there's plenty of water to wade on these big rivers out there without using guides. Now, they're wonderful guides, and you'll usually catch a lot more fish with a guide because they know where they are and what to do. But there's certainly miles and miles of waters out there you can wade on your own. But let's say, well, for instance, maybe we're on right above convict's grade there on the Yellowstone. We're going to wade into the head of the pool. Stay back on the side. I mean, when I say on the side, I mean I'm standing within 5 feet of the dry land behind me. Now, the riffle's out in front of me. All right, the riffle's running from left to right. I'm sitting here looking right at it as it's going by. I'm staying back almost on dry land. My first cast, and let's say I'm using a spuddler. I'm down there where there are a whole lot of sculpins. Let's say I'm using a spuddler. That first cast is only going to be about 20 feet. Well, Murray, my gosh, the water out there isn't but 2.5 to 3 feet deep. Why are you going to fish that? Because often, especially in low light level, but at any time of the day, those fish can move into those riffles to feed on the food that's available. And like I say, a lot of time we're talking about sculpins. So I'm staying back on dry land almost, making a 20 to 30 foot cast out there, and I'm going to fish, make that down across, I cast down across stream at about a 10 degree angle, and I strip that back very slowly. Usually I'm stripping about 6 inches of line about every 5 seconds, and swim that back, staying right in my footsteps. I'm going to lengthen that cast maybe 5 feet and do that same thing. So basically I'm fishing the water right beside me in the riffle before it has really dumped into the pool. And this is one waterman put me on 2 years ago. It's amazing. Every year I catch some of my biggest fish doing this. I think it's partly because the average guy wades into that thing. He wades out and stands right where those fish are. And, well, of course, by that time, those fish are long gone. So I think I'm fishing to fish a lot of times that are pushovers because they don't even see most people's flies. But other than that, they see somebody's waders. So fish that out. Now, once I've covered that corner, now remember the water's going from my left to my right, I'm going to wade downstream maybe 10 feet. Then I'm getting more serious about the technique. I'm casting out. How far? Well, I make some long casts. But that's entirely up to you. Make the cast you're comfortable with because you've got to be able to set the hook on these guys. You're not going to hook many of big fish on streamers by luck. Cast across the stream. We'll say you've come downstream 10 feet by now from below the riffle. You're casting down across. You can make a 50-foot cast, 60-foot cast. You've got your fly sinking down the bottom. You're stripping it about 6 inches every 5 seconds, and you're swimming it. Very important, no exceptions. You want your rod tip pointed where the line is coming out of the water. Not down in the water, but at the angle the line is coming out of the water. And the purpose of that is to be able to feel that strike in your line hand. And then when you feel that strike, you're down deep. You got a big fly. You got a big leader. Hopefully you got a big fish. You sock it to him. Get used to setting the hook with your line hand as well as the rod. Telegraph it to him quicker. Hook some more securely. And then I'll use that same technique and march all the way down to the tail of the pool. Now, if you happen to get out there in September, which we often do, some of the browns are flirting around thinking about spawning. I don't like to fish for them when they're spawning, but then when they're out there courting around, the tail of the pools are gold mines. We used to float the Yellowstone and Hurley would look down, look at that spawning bed, look at that spawning bed. Well, that's what's going on. And the tails of the pools can give you some outstanding streamer fishing. But again, I don't like to fish for them once they're actually in the act of spawning. But the down and across thing, cover the whole thing. Let's say we're down at Convict's Great. You went in at the island, you've got, my gosh, you got a half a day's fishing out there without even getting out of sight of your car. Let's say you came down through a nice long pool that was, 200 yards long. And you got a couple up in the head, you got a couple in the tail, but your big fish were right smack dab in the middle of the pool, and you caught three or four pretty good-sized fish, but when you fished on down, you got on down, didn't pick any more up, you got down the tail. That's what I call the hot spot. Now, you mark that, and I don't care what you mark it by. There's one pool out there on the Madison below the KOA ground. I always mark on the Yellowstone below the KOA campground. There's an old ranch gate that washed in on the far side. Well, many times the hot spot's a little bit above that ranch gate, and sometimes the hot spot's a little bit below that ranch gate. But the hot spot in those big pools in the big rivers will often be, 30 feet long. So after you've covered that thing, you've done what you've done, before you head on out of there, go back up to that hot spot, which you marked real carefully by that ranch gate or whatever you marked it, then go through there again. You'll be amazed how many times you'll go back to that same spot you just covered, maybe with the same fly, although I do change flies. If I've been showing those guys a spuddler, then I'll show him an ollie strength second time through. But go back up to that hot spot in the middle of the pool that you cannot see why in the world it's the hot spot, but for some reason the fish can. Go back up to that hot spot and go down through there at least once, and the third time. And it's amazing. You might pick up three or four big fish in the same spot you just covered. Now, I'm coming to the end of this. I know we covered a whole lot. Now, next week we'll be back with our next podcast. I'm finally hobbling around here on my new knee. Next week we're going to get into the small streams, and I'm going to take you from, say, September into probably go all the way to the end of the year. But if you have any question on any of this is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Give me a call or stop in, and I'll be glad to cover all of this with you. Thank you very much.